Okay, we'll call the committee to order. And we're going to change around the agenda here a little bit and listen to the Marquardt bill first. But first, Representative Rukavina, will you move the meeting minutes of the February 16th meeting?
Chair, so move it to correct.
All right. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Marquardt, you ready to have your bill? Okay. The chair will move House File 751 be recommended to pass, and House File 536 be recommended to pass. And does this have any other stops? And we referred to the general register. No, hold on. We're having correction. And be re-referred to the Committee on Jobs and Economic Opportunity Policy and Finance. Representative Marquardt, you want to explain your bill, please?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, thank you so much for hearing this bill today. And House File 536 was brought to me by union constituents and also a union contractor in western Minnesota, whose employees wanted to be able to, on the weekends, get back to their families and get back to the lakes and watch T-ball games and so forth with their family. And, of course, you know, in Minnesota, our summers are at a very high premium, and time at the lakes is of the essence. And it just happens in Minnesota that the construction season coincides with the lake season. I mean, if you can go figure that one, but it happens. Now, House File 536 is narrowly focused and written. And what it does is modifies the Davis-Bacon Act as it pertains to daily overtime, just daily overtime. And the prevailing wage says that overtime is paid or kicks in after 40 hours during the week and 8 hours during the day. That's Minnesota Davis-Bacon. The federal Davis-Bacon has no overtime daily limits. It does have the 40-hour work week. Of course, the 8-hour daily overtime, especially for outside, outdoor contractors, is very problematic, especially if you want to try to complete your work during the week, Monday through Friday, especially when you're out of town 100, 150, a couple hundred miles from families and so forth. So what this bill would do, it would allow for both building and highway projects in areas outside the metropolitan area to transfer 4 hours of lost work performed due to unfavorable weather conditions. And the way this bill would work is that you could take 4 hours from that lost day and transfer it to any one other day during the week. It would be paid, though, as if the 4 hours were performed on the day that the loss, that the day was lost. So it's narrowly defined in that regard. Now, why did I bring this? And certainly realizing that it creates a little consternation. But this really is both an employee and family-friendly bill. And here we have a union contractor in western Minnesota who's trying to be competitive and also trying to do the best for the employees. And I think this bill not only allows employees to get back home on the weekend, but also allows a contractor to stay competitive and also to complete the projects in that small time frame that we have called summertime to get the project done. So it's family-friendly, employee-friendly, and quite frankly, helps the union contractor in our area remain more competitive. At this time, I would like to turn it over to Mr. Mark Saleen, who is owner of Saleen Brothers, and he has some comments kind of on exactly how this works in a little more detail.
And Mr. Saleen, could you please introduce yourself for the committee?
My name is Mark Saleen, and I am the president of Saleen Brothers Incorporated,
construction company located in Hawley, Minnesota, which is up by Moorhead, Detroit Lakes area along Highway 10. And I'd like to thank you for this opportunity to present this bill. Just to give you a little background on our company, we employ around 50, 55 employees during the peak of the season. We are a union company. We are a member of a union contractor with the Local 49. Our operators are Local 49. We do highway and underground construction. All our work is done outside. So weather is a major factor in when we try to build our projects. I believe you were handed an illustration that I put together regarding this bill. I don't know. I'll glaze over that quickly. Currently,
can you hold on, Mr. C? Okay, it was on top of your folder. Okay, go ahead and proceed.
Thank you. Just an illustration of 536. I have a. I'll just start at the top and quickly go through this. The current requirement, the prevailing wages of the state-funded construction contracts issued by Minnesota Department of Labor and Industry set for the prevailing hours of labor is 8 hours per day and 40 hours per week. The current requirement does not allow a contractor the flexibility to effectively manage his workforce due to unfavorable weather conditions. And you guys can read the rest of this. The impact is significant. What I want to stress is overtime over 8 hours per day is not a problem as long as weather allows us to perform our work. Our trade does not have the luxury of having a roof over our heads where rain is not a factor. 536 allows the contractor to manage his labor much more effectively. And on page 2, I ran a few scenarios on how, and this happens week in and week out, during the construction season in western Minnesota. Ideally, on top of page 2, I got the week laid out there, hours worked per day. In the first column there, this is an example of a typical work week with no overtime impact due to weather or current overtime overage statute. Our typical crews work, we set our schedules, the production schedules up at 56-hour work weeks, 4 12s and an 8 on Friday, get our employees an opportunity to get out early on Friday, enjoy the weekend, and come back well-rested for Monday. When it doesn't rain, we have no problem meeting that production. Okay, the next two is a scenario if we lose a day to a rain event. The following two examples illustrate the impact of current overtime overage statute due to a single rain day event. The first example shows the impact on an employee working on Saturday, but saves the contractor additional overtime by working Saturday. So if we in this example, if we lose a day, say, on Thursday, we get rained out. We work Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. We get our 3 12-hour days in. We lose Thursday. That forces us to move the work week back one day. In order to meet the overtime overage statute, we got to get 5 straight 8 hours in. That forces us to have our crews work Saturday. And again, it's the same scenario as the first line, 56 hours work, 16 hours overtime. Or we have an option of not working Saturday and loading the hours up on Friday, so we work 4 12-hour days, which is 48 hours total, but by the 8-hour statute that we're currently following, that costs 16 hours of additional overtime. So we got to choose whether we let our employees have Saturday off or we work Saturday to meet the overtime requirement. We choose working Saturday. In the fourth line down there, 536 gives the contractor the flexibility to manage overtime and employee morale with this example. This allows the contractor to transfer 4 hours per day to alleviate the overtime over 8 requirement. So in that scenario, our 3 12s, we get the rain event, we load up Friday with 12, we give them Saturday off. Yes, we don't meet our 56-hour requirement for our production, but it's a strong enough work week that will carry us through the construction season. So 48 hours work, 8 hours overtime, it meets the federal guideline. The last two examples I got on there is a major rain event where we lose the entire week, say a 12-inch downpour. Then we're unable to do anything. We work 3 12-hour days under the current law. That's 36 hours work, 12 hours of overtime. We haven't hit the 40-hour threshold. 536 will allow us to reallocate those hours, 36 hours work, with no additional overtime to the project. The scenarios listed above all meet federal requirement of overtime over 40. It just gives us some flexibility to manage our workforce to allow our employees their weekends with their families. Thank you.
Yeah. Representative Markford.
Mr. Chair, at this time I'd like to turn it over to Scott Sorensen, Superintendent at Sleen Brothers.
Mr. Sorensen, could you please introduce yourself to the committee?
Scott Sorensen, Superintendent for Sleen Brothers.
Could you pull up the microphone, please? Thank you.
I'm Superintendent for Sleen Brothers out of Holly, as Mark stated, and I'm in the field directly dealing with the men daily. And just, he's went through pretty much everything, but, you know, just for the morale of the men and Paul talked to us earlier, and he asked how the men felt about the overtime over 8, and not one employee that works for us likes it. And I actually, every one of 100% of Sleen Brothers employees signed this petition that we had made up in our office, because none of them want to work Saturday. I mean, it's just, you know, there's all this stuff going on for everyone on the weekends and stuff, and we just don't have a choice. If you know, they go to work and run one of these overtime over 8 jobs, you know, 1 week you might make it, the next 2 you're not going to make it. So it just, I know there's people in here that don't believe that the union and stuff, but we're union, like Mark said, and we got a lot of union signatures on here that out in our area there in western Minnesota that they do not want this. They just want the overtime over 40.
Okay, Representative Mark, where you have anything
else to add? Mr. Chair, I have one more witness, if I might.
Sure.
And that is, I'd like to call Dave Semered from Associated General Contractors of Minnesota.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Semered. Could you please introduce yourself?
Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee, I'm Dave Semered, CEO for Associated General Contractors of Minnesota. And I've been asked to testify today regarding the agreements, the current collective bargaining agreements that we have with four different trades that cover highway construction work for union employers in Minnesota. And just to show what we've done with regard to overtime and hours of work with those four trades. But the Labor's Heavy Highway Agreement is a statewide agreement covering labor employees in the state of Minnesota, and in all districts of that collective bargaining agreement, hours in excess of 12 hours daily are overtime hours, and 40 hours weekly. So we already have negotiated provisions for over 12 hours daily work. Anything over 12 hours a day then would be overtime. This would be for private work, not public work covered by Davis-Bacon. On the carpenters, in 47 western Minnesota counties, we have 10 hours work daily and 40 hours a week. So the first 10 hours would be at straight time. With the operators, these are areas outside of the metro area, work in excess of 40 hours. So there's no limit on daily hours. And lastly, the Teamsters, this is also a statewide agreement, and we're talking about people who drive trucks in Minnesota, and those are in areas in the state of Minnesota, 12 hours per day. So in those four collective bargaining agreements, we've negotiated terms that are fairly liberal and apply to private work, but not public work.
Okay, any Representative Markowitz, did you have something to add?
Just one comment, and then we'll open the questions, and there might be other testifiers. But as you heard from the other testifiers here, this is a real concern, and that affects people and families. And what we're trying to do here is to keep this very narrow and very focused, and that's why it's written as it is. So I would I guess, open up the questions.
We'll take questions, and then we'll get to Mr. Anfang. Representative Coles is on the list first, and then we'll go to Representative Rukavina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Marquardt, with regard to the scope of the bill, and I walked in about 2 minutes late, I think. You maybe explained this when you were introducing the bill, but can you tell me why you're limiting this to the area outside of the 7-county metro? And again, I apologize if you explained that earlier.
Representative Mark.
Mr. Chair and Representative Coles, I mean, it certainly could extend to the entire state. What we wanted to do was keep this as limited as possible so it reflected at least the situation that we had here. So it certainly could, but we decided just to keep it limited to outstate.
Representative Coles.
There's no policy reason then other than you're just trying to limit the scope, because I think I'm going to vote for your bill, but I see, you know, I'm in the 7-county metro area, Carver County, Scott County, and we've got people who would like to be able to be home on Saturdays and spend Saturdays with their family too. So I'm not going to offer an amendment at this point in time, but maybe want to talk with you about it after the bill moves out of committee. Thank you.
We'll take that as a comment. Representative Rukavina.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Marquardt, and I'm glad Representative Cole brought that up because Representative Marquardt, as I talked to you earlier today, this is just, you know, a slippery slope for you to be going down, and you can see now that Representative Cole's mind is turning too, and see how he can take benefits away from working people in the state. But, you know, it seems to me your bill... you're a teacher in Greater Minnesota, Representative Marquardt. There would be those at this table that would argue, in order to save the budget crisis, that since the cost of living in Greater Minnesota supposedly is less, that you should be paid less as a teacher in Greater Minnesota. Or I see Representative Prince over there. She's a nurse in Greater Minnesota, and I think she's a member of the SEIU, excuse me. And I'm sure she doesn't want to work for less when they negotiate. I don't see this bill as family friendly, because let me tell you, Representative Marquardt, being involved in a labor family, I know the struggles that my father and my aunts that were members of unions went through to get us a 40-hour work week with overtime and an 8-hour day with overtime. And correct me if I'm wrong, either one of the gentlemen at the table, but if you are union employers, and I commend you for that, you have the right now to negotiate your hours. You have a collective bargaining agreement. And the gentleman from, I don't know where he was, that just testified, well, he's still up there, talked about his collective bargaining agreement. So it's an interference to me. You know, Representative Marker, you're not making enough money at $32,000 as a legislator to be the chief business agent for whoever you're trying to be the chief business agent for here at Capitol today. I would certainly hope that my colleagues on the Democratic Farmer Labor Party side of the aisle vote this bill down. And, Mr. Chair, I have an amendment. If it isn't going to be voted down or tabled, perhaps, to offer, since there's a bill here to take away benefits that people have fought for in the labor movement for years, I have an amendment to add my minimum wage bill to this to at least give them a little bit extra money in their pocket, which I think is far more family-friendly than this bill in front of us. So that's my comment for the time being. But, Mr. Chair, while I do have the floor, I would ask you, when will my amendment be offered? In what order will we do it?
Representative Rukavina, the committee staff didn't receive it in the 24-hour rule.
Well,
now, if it was a technical amendment...
It's technical. Very technical.
I appreciate your creative interpretation of technical, but rather than set a precedent of taking any all-comers that are not technical early in session here, I'm going to rule it out of order.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'd appeal the ruling of the chair, then. If you're going to run this like the floor, the House floor, then and not allow me to offer minimum wage, which I would say is very germane to this issue, and you're going to rule me out of order, then I would appeal the ruling of the chair. And I'd ask for a roll call vote.
The roll call being requested, the clerk will take the roll.
Mr. Chairman?
Wait a minute. Let's clarify what the vote is. Voting yes, the amendment, Do the members have the amendment?
No.
Okay. It's not before the committee.
The amendment is the minimum wage increase, members.
So. Okay. Do we have pages maybe past the amendment? Representative Mueller, you have a question?
I think a point of order on the rules. First of all, as I discussed with you, I think we don't want to get too technical on the 24-hour rule, but in this case, the bill was moved up, and so with all fairness...
I lost a couple hours.
my understanding was it's originally scheduled, wasn't it, for a day later?
I
wasn't on the schedule...
Yeah,
it was not on the schedule. The
revised notices were
today.
Sent out Friday.
It was?
The notices were put out Friday.
Oh.
So does everybody have the amendment?
Chair, I didn't have an amendment. I had enough copies for the staff and you.
Mr. Okay, Representative Rukavina, maybe we can bring up the whole subject and we can go through and let other members ask questions to the bill and why it's being copied. Okay, Representative House.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chairman.
I'm sorry. Representative Marquardt, did you want to comment to that?
Yeah, if I could. And I thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Rukavina, I certainly know your heartfelt passion on this one, and I wouldn't be bringing this up if it was just for a light and transient reason, but, and I know you talk, you know, you talk about the slippery slope, and I've heard the camel's nose under the tent, but if we applied that to every bill in law down here, regardless of how sacred that might be, we might as well close those green books up behind the chair and never take another look at them again. I mean, this is something that is a matter of, I know there's a lot of employees who would rather give up a few dollars of overtime to be with their families on the weekend. I know in my case that would be it. Dollars aren't always number one. And this is just trying to be a bill that would help address a situation, I think probably many situations around the state. And I certainly understand the controversy behind all of this. But, I mean, if there's certain things we can never look at, then I don't know why we're here as legislators if there's a certain block of bills we simply can never even look at. But also, I know there's one comment I think has to be clarified that Mr. Semerad would...
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, one thing I wanted to clarify was the unions that we've dealt with in these four collective bargaining agreements I've referenced earlier, the laborers, the carpenters, the operating engineers, and the Teamsters, have already agreed to flexible work hours and more liberal overtime rules for private work. We have this language in the contract already. The only problem is the contractors don't get the benefit of it because of the state prevailing wage law. So when they're working for a private concern, a shopping center or residential development or whatever the case may be that is not covered by the state Davis-Bacon law, they can use these more liberal conditions. The only time the 8-hour rule comes into play is when they're working on public works that are covered by Davis-Bacon.
Chair. Representative Rukavina?
Chair, sir, if you have a private business, as you said, we're building a clinic for a bunch of doctors, and you have a union contractor who's negotiated a overtime after 8 hours, that is not true, the statement you just said. It's a negotiated item, which is my point exactly. Really, because it's a private or prevailing wage doesn't mean that it's not negotiated to pay overtime after 8 or 40.
Mr. Semerad?
Mr. Rukavina, I think I would disagree with your comment. We have collective bargaining agreements in place right now, and I'm just talking about agreements that are covering highway construction. I'm not talking about the building construction sector. These agreements that I've referenced all have different terms for overtime and for hours of work than are required by the state Davis-Bacon law. So basically what we're doing is we're giving one set of conditions to the private sector, which are more liberal benefits in terms of hours of work, than we are giving the state of Minnesota for private for public construction. So it seems to me like we're penalizing the state of Minnesota by not allowing the contractors to utilize these terms that have already been negotiated.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Rukavina.
One more point of clarification, sir. In this bill, correct me if I'm wrong again, but in this bill, I don't see anything in this bill that distinguishes that this applies only to highway construction. It doesn't it apply to building all prevailing wage construction? Mr. Chair?
Mr. Semrad, or Representative Marquardt.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rukavina, it does apply both to the buildings and the highway portion of it. Right. So, Mr. Chair, if I'm...
Representative Rukavina.
And first of all, Representative Marquardt, let me tell you that I can tell you unequivocally that my constituents in the building trades in the northeastern part of the state would not support your bill. So if you want it for Clay County or wherever you want it for, maybe you should narrow it down to that. But number two, I want the members to know this. This doesn't have anything to do with rain days, as we heard in the beginning of this testimony. It now has to do with the fact that perhaps the carpenters or plumbers are in the fixing up a wing on the Mesabi Community College in Virginia, Minnesota, and now this could apply to them also.
Which
has nothing
Marquardt.
To do with rain. Yeah.
Representative Marquardt.
Chair, Representative Rukavina, it would have to relate to unfavorable weather conditions. I mean, that is the wording in the bill.
Representative House.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Marquardt, in some of your statements, you're just scaring the bejeebers out of me. You said it's a family bill. It allows someone to go to the lake on Saturday. You're saying that as if you work 4/12s and it rains on a Thursday, that I can't go to the lake on Saturday because my employer's going to say, no, you got to move dirt on Saturday. You know, that's reason right there for me to vote against this bill. Representative Rukavina offers his amendment. I certainly would support his getting it on because that would give me two reasons to vote against the bill.
That's what I'm hoping for, Representative.
Representative Marquardt, can I answer that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Howells, yes. But it would help the resorts up in your area getting more people home on the weekends, of course. But I would like to say that what's happening here is that you're putting contractors in a very difficult position because, as you know, there's always a date in which the project has to be done, and the only way it can be delayed in most contracts that when I was mayor and deal with is if there's rain days that the engineers keep in track of. So you're putting contractors in a very difficult position about, well, whether or not to allow employees to be home on the weekend or to get the hours so you get this project done on time. And that we shouldn't be putting businesses in that type of a quandary where they're deciding, boy, we've got to meet this deadline, but I'd like to let the employees go home for the weekend, be with their families, and help morale. They shouldn't have to be making those decisions.
Representative House?
Well, Mr. Chairman, again, Representative Marquardt, you said you'd like to see folks home with their families. Are you telling me then that the employers are going to say, no, you can't go home, you have to work on Saturday?
Representative Marquardt.
Mr. Chair and Representative Howells, the pressure being on the end is that there is a due date that the project has to be completed or there's fines, which increases the cost of project. So I'm saying that you're putting the union contractor in a very difficult position having to make that choice.
Representative Howells.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Marquardt, you keep saying exactly the reason I can't possibly vote for this bill because you're telling me that the employer is going to put pressure on the employee. I mean, if I worked 4/12s, well, wait a minute, I guess I do right now, don't I? But if I worked 4/12s in the summer on highway, and you know, that's 48 hours, that's okay. Gives me a few hours of overtime there, and my employer says, well, Larry, you got to work Saturday. Well, you know, I'm going to have a message for that employer, and I'm not going to work on Saturday. I'm going to go be with my family. But you're telling me, in an essence, that I can't do that. And, Mr. Chairman, I want a roll call on this bill when it gets to time to vote.
All right. Representative Marquardt.
I am going to refer this one to Mr. Semerad, because there isn't any more I can add on that.
Semerad.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, we in the construction industry work, if we're lucky, especially in the highway sector, maybe 1,500 to 1,600 hours per year. Sometimes it's better than that, and sometimes it's not so good. But this allows the contractor to schedule work that he or she otherwise would not perform, and actually provides work opportunities for members or for their employees that might not otherwise be able to work in this situation. Contractors will avoid overtime when they can because it's expensive. They have a budget to meet, but they also have to work to meet the schedule. And being that Minnesota has such a short construction season, they have to work when they have an opportunity. And that does mean from time to time that employees have to work on Saturdays. It's not preferred, but that does happen. So it is an opportunity for people to work, and I don't think it should be construed as the employer being dictatorial or requiring people to work on Saturdays when they don't have to.
Representative Hollis, do you have one more before we move on?
This will be my final one. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You just made my point because you stated this is the way it is in this industry, and employees have to work on Saturdays. You just said that. Thank you.
Representative Search.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Marquardt, welcome to the Civil Law Committee.
Ms. Long, I have a question for you, actually. On line 21, and I'm only doing this because I'm practicing, because I do have to go to the Civil Law Committee. On line 21, is there any definition in statute for unfavorable weather conditions?
Ms. Long.
Mr. Chair, Representative Sertich, I am not aware of any definition of unfavorable weather conditions in the prevailing wage statutes or in the Department of Labor and Industries rules promulgated to implement those statutes.
Representative Sertich.
Mr. Chair and Representative Marquardt, not being a meteorologist by trade, and I don't think you are either, we're putting in statute some pretty vague terms. Does this mean a light breeze? Does this mean, because I know you're trying to narrow your bill to not affecting greater the metropolitan area and only affecting the wages of people in greater Minnesota. And I do have to disagree with you a bit. Those folks that you're saying are going up to Representative Howe's district to go to the resorts, you're sending them up there with less money under this bill, so they can't spend as much money as they could have before at Eel Pouch or anything else. But not being a meteorologist, sorry for the tangent, what does unfavorable weather conditions mean? 40 degrees, 30 degrees, partly cloudy, chance of rain, very vague. And maybe you can help me out in here or get your NORAD radar unit out to explain this portion.
Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and Representative Sertich. I actually did a lot of thinking about that one prior to the meeting. And, you know, the reality of it is that the contractors are going to be working if there's any way they can be working. And again, with always a time limit that the project has to do or there's potential penalties, they're going to be working unless it's truly a rainout. And then every project has an engineer who's working for the city or the state or whoever who's keeping track of these days. So that would probably have to be worked out. I think maybe the Department of Labor and Industry or the Department of Transportation that enforces prevailing law would certainly write rules that would pertain to that. But the reality of it is that the contractors are working unless it's, a rain and that type of thing. I mean, it was brought to my attention, would it be high humidity or heat? Well, I don't think the engineer who is supervising the project would consider that as a day off, so to speak, to count against the day they have to be done with the project. So, like I said, probably that part might have to be in rules. I could come back with an amendment to try to define that, but I don't know if we would want that.
Representative Sertich.
Mr. Chair, Representative Marquardt, you know I like you a lot. If this bill passes, which I actually hope it does not, I will co-author the bill with you to rename the Department of Labor and Industry to the Department of Labor and Industry and Weather Conditions then.
Representative Moe. Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Pepin, to that point?
Yeah, I would suggest to Representative Marquardt that you add an amendment to delete the word unfavorable and replace it with any.
Representative Marquardt, does that help it get out of
here? I'm trying to keep the scope really narrow.
he gave your idea the consideration that it deserves, I guess. Representative Moe.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Marquardt, I usually agree with you on about everything up to this point now. I'd like to just share a quick story. I grew up in a union household. My mom was a union bartender. 8-hour days for her were a lot. She came home after 8-hour days exhausted. Adding 4 hours to those days upon at times when she occasionally had to do, that meant as kids on Saturday or Sunday, she was too wiped out for us to go camping or whatever we were going to do. So that overtime pay that she received for those additional 4 hours was small compensation for the toll that it took on my mom. What's to say that this couldn't be extended to other service professionals? Say if there's for her, she worked at the bar at the airports, if there was foul weather there where they couldn't bring in new employees. I mean, it's as been said before, this is a fairly slippery slope, and other professions would have justification for having exemptions for that those professions as well. There would be a toll on workers, and we have an 8-hour workday and 40-hour work week for a reason. So I will be voting against this, and thanks. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Marquardt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Moe. I certainly respect your no vote on this, but this is why I tried to keep, and the intent of the people here is to keep this very narrow, and I've even talked to the chair and others that if this bill was to be a Christmas tree for all sorts of ornaments and that I would withdraw that. That's not the intent. And I understand the slippery slope, but again, you could apply that to almost any legislation. And with that, it would really handcuff us on almost anything we looked at. And I think to even have debate on an issue like this is worthwhile.
Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Samarat, what association did you say you represented?
Associated General Contractors.
Oh, okay.
Representative Mullery.
And then you said it's something about a short construction season. What is short? 10 or 11 months?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, Representative Mullery, Minnesota has a short highway construction season, and usually construction starts sometime in April, and if we're lucky, extends through until November. In other states to the south of us, they work many, many more months, and in some states to the south, they work 12 months out of the year. So the need to work is always there, and contractors and employees don't like to work on weekends because we all need time off and need time to rest. But the schedule is the schedule, and the budget is the budget, and sometimes sacrifices have to be made, and that's just the way it is in Minnesota.
Representative Miller.
I also want to clarify something. I think you said something about that your private contracts for state highways, I didn't know there were any state highways that weren't covered by prevailing wage.
Mr. Samarat.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I think it is a little confusing sometimes the way the industry, the collective bargaining is actually done. Our contracts in Minnesota that we negotiate with the different unions. And in our case, we're only talking about what we would call the basic crafts, which in this case would be the operating engineers that operate the equipment, the laborers that do the labor work, the carpenters, and the teamsters. Those agreements cover both private work and public work together. And if we negotiate something in those contracts that applies to private work, but for some reason the state law precludes a term or condition from being implemented, then the contractors for that part of the work then are at a disadvantage. And in this case, the state Davis-Bacon law mandates overtime over 8 hours a day, when our contract actually says it's over 10 or 12 hours a day. So that's the problem.
Representative Mullery, and then we'll have Representatives Fritz and Loeffler. Representative Mullery.
Mr. Chairman, and Mr. Samarat, it seems to me like, are you saying that the prevailing wage doesn't apply to state highways if you have a private contract separate? It seems like
no.
That's what you're saying.
No,
And I don't think that, I didn't think that was true.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mullery, no, the state prevailing wage law, the Little Davis-Bacon law as we call it, applies to all public construction work in Minnesota.
Right, that's
whether it be highways or building construction, doesn't
what
matter.
What I've been trying to get to, and Mr. Chairman, follow up on that.
Representative,
basically, you're trying to say that what you're, first of all, highway is only part of what's covered by this, but it's not just highway. But another factor is what you're saying about private contracts, that would be, you know, being different from prevailing wage, that would be true of everything in the prevailing wage statute. So basically, and I know some of your members for years, ever since I got involved in politics, have been trying to get rid of the prevailing wage law. So your same argument seems to apply to anything in the prevailing wage law, right? The fact that you can have private contracts that are different.
Mr. Samrad.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mullery, no, we're not trying to get rid of the prevailing wage law here. All we're trying to do, and I think Representative Marquardt and Mr. Saleen said it earlier, is that we're trying to allow contractors who have schedule problems because of rain or inclement weather reschedule 4 hours of that lost time at straight time. That's what I think the bill is intended to do. It's by no means is it intended to compromise the state prevailing wage law.
Mr. Chairman, one more question, if I can get an answer to what I'm trying to get the answer. Does not your argument apply to all of the prevailing wage law? It would seem to be. The argument that you can have a private contract that's at lower rates, et cetera. Doesn't that apply to everything in the prevailing wage law?
Mr. Samarat.
It's a real simple question.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mueller, could you restate that in another way? Because I'm not getting that exactly. I don't understand your question.
Representative Mueller.
I'm sorry. You keep stating over and over that you can have a private contract with different terms that are not quite as beneficial to the workers. That statement as a reason against this, that would be a reason against any part of the prevailing wage law, correct?
Mr. Samrat.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mullery, no, I don't believe that's correct. No, I don't believe so. What I mean by private contract, maybe that's where we need a little clarification, is a contract with an owner that where it is not covered by the state prevailing wage law. For instance, a golf course.
Mr. Chairman, I maybe when somebody else comes up for testimony, we can get the answer out of them. I think probably the members understand what the question is.
Representative Fritz.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Marquardt, I too will be voting against this bill. In my industry, the nursing home industry, where I have worked for over 40 years, I have nurses who down in my district work 8 to 16 hours a day and then go home and load pigs. If they're going to be called back to work 4 more hours or double time the next day, they count on their overtime. That's why they come back. We send our children to school on overtime wages.
for Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Marquardt, I'm still confused as to how this is at all deals with the weekend issue, because it looks to me that this just cuts costs and cuts wages but doesn't influence the work week, in that the language of the bill allows you to transfer the makeup of those missed hours due to unforeseen weather conditions to any other day, which could be a Saturday, it could be a Sunday, it could be a Thursday. And so I still don't quite get how this one is being shown or sold and presented as an advantage to weekends, when to me there's nothing in the bill that would guarantee those weekends off.
Mr. Stellan, would you care to address that?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Mark.
Representative Loeffler. I could have Mr. Saleem address that.
Mr. Saleem.
Thank you. To address that question, what in Mr. Representative Powell, he hit the nail right on the head. You know, it's no fun taking away weekends. And to answer your question, what it does, it gives a contractor the flexibility. For example, without the overtime overage statute, we're able to get our work done in 4 days instead of five. We'll overload that Friday day to give them a two-day rest. Now, the transfer hours, if we lose a day on Thursday, what the law, as it currently is stated, it forces our work week back a day in order for us to fulfill the overtime overage requirement, meaning that we need to get our straight eight in. That's what we do as we manage a project. So that pushes the work week back. With 536, we're allowed to do what we can do in 5 days and four. The employee will still continue to get their overtime over 40 hours a week and get their weekend.
Representative Loeffler, did you have any follow-up?
Well, Mr. Chairman and guests, it does seem to me that that's a choice that's still available to you under existing law, and that this language doesn't change anything but the dollars and how it's calculated.
Okay, I think that's it for the list. We have the Rukavina amendment. Representative Rukavina.
Mr. Chair, I know that because I'm willing to, you know, compromise with you, that you'll be willing to give me a hearing on this in a later date, so I'll withdraw the amendment.
Well, thank you very much, Representative Rukavina. Appreciate that. Now we, Mr. Anfang has been waiting very patiently. I appreciate your patience. If you'd like to come forward and introduce yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Dick Anfang, the president of the Minnesota State Building Trades Council.
Mr. Anfang, could you get a little closer to the microphone?
Okay.
Thanks.
Sorry about that. Dick Anfang, president of the Minnesota State Building Trades Council, representing approximately 70,000 construction workers in the state of Minnesota, unionized. I could do this very short, and I intend to be short anyway, but at the risk of being considered a Christian conservative, I think that I think God believes in a 40-hour work week, or he wouldn't make it rain the way he does, causing schedules to be delayed and such as that. So that's just a little bit about me and what I believe in. But I believe that House File 536 is a bill relating to employment. It relates to weather, and it relates to hours of work and interpretation of the aforementioned. We oppose this bill on several fronts. First of all, it does include commercial. There's absolutely no reason for that at all. In Minnesota, the contractors, the architects, we have developed technologies that allow us to work literally year-round in just about every working condition that presents itself. And in Highway and Heavy, it was stated, I believe, by Representative Markwork that that rain days are allowed for. It is a fact of life in America, in Minnesota. It does snow, it does rain, and schedules, if you look at our history, the way we've been doing it under the current rules, we have met the timelines. We have met the budgets. And the building trades, that is our hallmark. That is what we do. That's what we train for and provide for to the end user, that being the state of Minnesota. On time and on budget construction in Minnesota. There may be certain parts of Minnesota where a couple of contractors maybe have worse weather than we do here or other parts of the state, I don't see a huge outcry coming from across the state for the need for this change in the way Minnesota does construction work at all. I believe, and we believe, that this bill would result over time in lowering of the wages and benefits due to workers on highway construction and commercial construction. The bill would destroy over time the right, the 8-hour day that has been fought for and enjoyed by workers for many decades in the state of Minnesota. The bill uses the excuse of unfavorable weather to cause employees to work extended hours, including Saturdays and Sundays, without the benefit of overtime. I strongly disagree with the fact that they are going to be allowed to go home on Saturday and on Sunday every week. Nobody can predict that it's only going to rain on Monday or Tuesday. It many times rains on Wednesday or Thursday or Friday, causing that work week not to be met, and the contractor wanting to get the job done so he gets paid when he needs to get paid on schedule, which is a benefit to us when we get paid on schedule. But I don't believe that this bill will alleviate that problem in any way of allowing our members to guarantee weekends up north. We believe also that the bill would, if passed, would create a two-tier system. Those people working overtime, those people working under weather conditions that are, or under fall weather conditions, unbelievable nightmare, I would think, in payroll for contractors, but that's not my job. And as my colleague, or not colleague, but Mr. Simrad from the AGC, who we typically work very well with, it's true that there are other, in collective bargaining agreements, other stipulations and conditions that allow for some of this. But there are also some real restrictions on it. It allows labor to participate in those decision-making factors. It allows certain conditions, and they're much more defined than they are in this bill. And that means that is the difference between what is collectively bargained and what is proposed in this bill. So this indeed does unfavorably affect collective bargaining. And I have many other issues with this bill, but I do want to respect the committee's time. I've heard a lot of very good questions from the committee, and I would relent to any questions that you have of us right now. But we strongly oppose the bill, and I hope you would not support this bill's furtherance into the process.
Thank you, Mr. Anthang. Any questions for Mr. Anthang at this point? Seeing none, thank you very much for your testimony. Is there anyone else who would like to testify for or against this bill? Seeing none, any further comments from the committee? Seeing none, the clerk will take the roll on the bill.
Representative Wilkin.
Yes.
Representative Atkins.
No.
Representative Clark.
No.
Representative Davids.
Yes.
Representative Fritz.
No.
Representative Gazelka.
Yes.
Representative Goodwin.
No.
Representative Gunther.
Yes.
Representative Hamilton.
Yes.
Representative Howells.
No.
Representative Yaros.
No.
Representative Coles.
Yes.
Representative Liebling.
No.
Representative Loeffler.
No.
Representative Moe.
No.
Representative Mallory.
No.
Representative Pepin.
Yes.
Representative Powell.
No.
Representative Rupadina.
No.
Representative Saylor?
No.
Representative Sertich?
No.
Representative Stevenson?
Yes.
Representative Simpson?
Yes.
Representative Silvestre?
Yes.
Representative Vandeveer? Representative Zellers?
Yes.
Being 11 votes in favor and 14 votes against, the amendment or the bill is not adopted.
Mr. Chair, thank you and committee members for your consideration.
Mr.
Thank
you, Chair, I thought nothing died in Congress.
Pardon?
That was one day.
Representative Garofalo, members, the next two bills deal with similar subject matter. Representative Vandeveer's chair is laying over House File 751 for consideration next week. We will hear testimony on Representative Garofalo, House File 938, and then lay that over also and see if the details between the two bills can be worked out. To get the bill in front of us, though, Representative Powell moves House File 938 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the GovOps. Representative Garofalo, you want to explain your bill?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman.
Good afternoon.
Members of the committee, thank you. First of all, allow me to introduce myself to some members of the committee. My name is Patrick Garofalo from House District 36B. I'm a first-term member. And this is a good piece of legislation I'm interested in offering. A little bit of my background, I'm a network engineer by trade, so I work with technology on a daily basis. And when the Dakota County Board of Commissioners came to me with this legislation, it seemed like a positive and proactive way to allow government to be efficient, to get the best bang for the buck from our local resource dollars, and to use technology in an effective manner. Mr. Chairman, in the interest of brevity, I'll just outline two very brief points in the legislation. First is that this bill would make permanent the demonstration project that Dakota, Lyon, Renville, Roseau, and Hennepin counties were a part of in 2003 and 2004. During fiscal year 2003, Dakota County became a pilot county under a task force known as the Electronic Real Estate Recording Task Force, or as I like to call it, the ERR Task Force.
Appreciate that, Representative Garofalo.
ERER. So, the purpose of the task force was to test the viability of electronic recording real estate documentation at the county level. On May 27th of 2003, Dakota County became the first county in the state of Minnesota to electronically record a satisfaction of mortgage. During the life of the project, the pilot project that expired on June 30th of 2004, Dakota County electronically recorded nearly 4,500 documents. During the 2004 legislative session, there were numerous proposals to extend this pilot project. Unfortunately, the inability of an omnibus to reach agreement on omnibus legislation resulted in a failure of the extension of the pilot project. This bill allows the pilot counties to continue the electronic recording of these documents on a permanent basis. Secondly, the bill establishes a process for additional counties to become certified to process certain documents electronically as well. It provides a process for pilot counties that have received state dollars to assist other counties in the process and their efforts to implement systems at the countywide level. Again, Mr. Chairman, I'll keep my comments brief. We do have a testifier here. If the highly respected chairman of the Commerce Committee would be interested in hearing it.
Absolutely. Please introduce yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Joel Beckman. I'm the Director of Property Records for Dakota County. And I'd like to thank the committee for this opportunity. As Representative Garofalo stated, Dakota County was the first county in the state of Minnesota to electronically record in its entirety a real estate document within the state of Minnesota. Over the course of approximately 1 year, we recorded, as Representative Garofalo said, approximately 4,500 real estate documents. To give you some idea, in the year 2000, Dakota County recorded approximately 100,000 real estate documents, and as you're all aware, economic conditions made it very popular for real estate documentation growth. In 2003, that had reached 221,000 real estate documents, or a 125% increase. We did this with no increase in staffing. We need things like electronic real estate document recording to handle those volume increases and be efficient and responsive to our constituents. This is also important to the industry itself because they can handle larger numbers of transactions at a lower cost to their customers. Overall, this saves our taxpayers money and it saves the consumer money. These are very secured transactions and are done very quickly with large transaction numbers. And basically, they're done with large financial institutions and are extremely secure. Again, I want to be brief and allow adequate time for any questions you may have. I can only impart to you that we enjoyed taking part of the Real Estate Recording Task Force, and we believe it is an important tool that all counties in the state of Minnesota be given the opportunity to utilize this technology as well.
Questions, Representative Moe.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Garofalo, do you have to be a techie person or a freshman in the majority to get lobby softballs from the administration?
Representative Garofalo.
Representative Moe, Mr. Chairman, Representative Moe, this bill actually did not originate from the administration. It came from the local constituents that I represent, the Dakota County Board of Commissioners. And as Representative Moe knows, no one works harder for Dakota County than I do.
Excuse me?
Oh, except for the chairman. except for the highly respected and universally revered chairman of the Commerce Committee, Representative Wilk.
Mr. Chairman, we got a fighting chance now.
Mr. Chairman, would you like to move out of the way? Mr. Chairman, I would cut the representative a little slack, and we all make mistakes here in committee. So
it's a big one, though.
Yeah.
Representative Rukavina, then Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Was it Mr. Beckman?
Yes.
What kind of, you know, I don't have a problem with this bill at all, Representative Garofalo, other than the fact that being a, you know, I'm not only a dinosaur when it comes to technology. I like to call myself a one-celled amoeba. I'm, you know, millions of years in front of the dinosaur. So, you know, what kind of insurance is there that, you know, this is going to get lost somewhere in outer space, this recording of, I'm assuming this is, you know, was always papered before people got a copy of it and whatever, but what assurance is there of that? And number one, Mr. Beckman, what kind of savings are we talking about for the taxpayer?
Representative Garofalo, you want to start with a techie answer that the chairman can understand, and then we'll go to Mr. Beckman?
Well, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Rukavina, as I stated earlier, there was a state task force that was established to identify technology guidelines and best practices for this procedure. I'm not particularly familiar with the ones and zeros and the credentials and certification process that took place from a technology angle. I can tell you that a task force made up of county members, state members, the Secretary of State's office was involved in an exhaustive process to make sure that those matters were addressed. Pertaining to the specific answer to that question, I can certainly have staff look into that, and perhaps we could set up a demonstration for you and verify that process.
You could just help me turn my computer on.
Mr. Beckman.
And perhaps I could expand upon the security issue and the how do you know it's not lost out in space. There are very complete logs kept on documents submitted by the companies and documents received by the counties, and we do go through a check that every document that they submit is returned, and there is a very brief period of time that it actually resides in any one area. We turned around 593 documents in an hour and a half to one of our submitters. That was in the door and out the door in an hour and a half. In the paper world, that would have taken in excess of 30 days. And to answer the second part of your question, that's where the savings come in. We save money on mailing costs. We save money on labor costs. These types of documents, mortgage satisfaction, certificates of release, and assignments of mortgage, are generally nuisance-type documents. They require less intervention and review on the part of staff than the more important documents, such as mortgages, deeds, contracts for deeds. This allows us to assign those resources to taking care of the harder documents, and it greatly limits our growth in staffing and costs associated with staffing.
Representative Rick Arena, to answer your Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, Representative Rick Arena, answer your question. When I was asking questions from the Dakota County Commissioners regarding this legislation, the rough ballpark figure they gave me was just for Dakota County, tens of thousands of dollars in savings. And that was just for Dakota County.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Garofalo. Representative Rukavina kind of anticipated my question, too. It was really about the security and the safety aspect of this. But if this is extended now, are there set requirements, technical or otherwise, for any county that wants to participate, so there's kind of a guarantee of that these things are continued as other counties get into it?
Sure. Mr. Chairman,
Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Liebling, good question. First of all, regarding the technical components of it, the task force guidelines that were laid out for the five pilot counties are the exact same criteria that will be used for the remaining 82 counties in the state. Thanks. the remaining 82 counties. So what will happen is this will be a peer evaluation process. And it's actually outlined in the legislation. If you look under Subdivision 4 of the legislation, it goes into greater detail there regarding the posting of county findings, the software that's been selected, and the criteria that's been identified to allow for this. But, again, from a security standpoint, we could, if the committee members would like, we could set up a demonstration and get into the technical aspects of it, but the chairman is noting his mild displeasure with that suggestion, so I'll...
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The security is one piece, but the other piece, I can't come up with the right word for it, but, you know, these documents need to be available sometimes many, many, many years later. And I'm just wondering about, you know, sometimes you have trouble years later with technology that relates back to the way something was stored or things like that. Are there any concerns about that?
Representative Garofalo. Mr. Beckman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling. What happens in the event of electronic document filing is the county receives a set of instructions known as a schema that populate the database, but it also creates and unwraps an image. An electronically recorded document looks exactly like a paper document in the recording world. It creates a paper document that I could print and certify a copy to you. It will be as available as any paper document. It's actually as secure or more secure than a paper document in that we are actually going out and verifying the digital signature with a public key, matching up the private key for digital signatures, and not wanting to get into a technical discussion. It would be very relatively easy to forge a signature. A digital signature is much harder to forge in this world, and it is verified. We don't verify handwritten signatures, but we do verify digital signatures.
Thank you.
Representative Atkins, and are you not from Dakota County also?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had no questions until I found out that Representative Garofalo was the best legislator in Dakota County. Now I have several.
Representative Powell, where do you represent?
I suspect Representative Powell may have some questions now, too.
Wow.
Specifically, Representative Garofalo, the interplay between this and the rule against perpetuities. Maybe you could walk us through that.
Representative Garofalo, could you kind of give us a lengthy explanation of that, please?
Absolutely. You know, Representative Atkins, this is exactly the sort of partisanship I was elected to stop. And I'm not going to respond to that sort of a partisan question.
we'll take it that he doesn't know the answer.
That's right. On the nose.
Representative Atkins, do you have anything else?
Just one brief follow-up. This one actually is legitimate. It builds on what was answered earlier. Admissibility questions. It sounds like the verification that goes along with electronic recording works just fine. line. Unfortunately, some of these transactions don't turn out well. They end up in civil lawsuits. Any issues with respect to admissibility?
Representative Garofalo.
I can tell you, first of all, we should backtrack that we're talking about the task force laid out three separate documents that are involved here. There's the satisfactions, certificates of release, and potentials for assignments. With regards to satisfactions or certificates, I'm not really familiar with the amount of litigation that takes place with those forms. My expectation would be that electronically documents would be accepted in court as well as hard copies. That'd be my expectation, but we can certainly review the task force guidelines and get back to you. Representative Atkins, do you want me to do that? Or?
He nodded.
No, thank you.
No.
Representative Mullery.
If I could add to
Mr. Beckman,
that question on admissibility. Currently, the only thing that keeps them from being admissible in a court of law is the requirement that there be an original signature on the document itself. As I understand it, and having reviewed this law, this would specifically exempt those three document types from the requirement for an original signature, therefore would make them admissible in a court of law.
Thank you. Representative Mullery.
Mr. Chairman, one of the points I was going to make is that the Hennepin County recorder is up there nodding his head yes to that answer before he made that. Also, I think, isn't it correct that there really is very little problem with these three documents ever? I mean, it's not like if you lose a deed from some party or if you lose where it becomes a real issue, it's pretty easy to prove whether or not the mortgage was satisfied or assigned, and you don't get into very many challenges on that. Isn't that correct also?
Mr. Beckman, do you care to address that?
Mr. Chair, that would be a fair statement. These are seldom challenged, and again, it is actually more secure in the electronic world than it is in the paper world to transmit these types of documents.
Representative Zellers.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Garofalo. When it comes to the software, I was curious because under that subdivision 4 you were talking about, it says that if the commission receives objections, the commission must forward them to the county for review and possible modifications. If someone doesn't like your version of the software or Dakota County's version, say us folks over in Hennepin don't care for what you've been doing over in Ramsey, if we complain, does that shut down your system, and what are the safeguards in that this doesn't turn into a fight about software for the next 5-10 years to come? And then the first line there, it says the commission must continue with the website. Is there a fiscal note to this at all, since the commission is going to have to maintain the website?
Representative Garofalo.
Answering the second question first, Mr. Chairman, Representative Zellers, there is no fiscal note for this. They currently maintain the site, so it'll just be the continuation of that. The first part of the question pertaining to the Hennepin County example, Hennepin County is already a pilot county, so they are already in this program and ready to go. Pertaining to specific software, if you look in section subdivision 1 of the legislation, point 2, I guess it'd be on line 15 there, it says the county uses software that was validated by the task force or uses software that has been validated under subdivision 3. In the hypothetical, you suggested a county would be able to enroll in the program using software that's been previously identified by the task force.
Representative Zellers?
One follow-up, Mr. Chair. But if someone does complain that it was validated, or they didn't like even those that were all validated by the task force, they still don't like the software, I'm just worried that somebody's going to complain and shut down the system on you.
Representative Garofalo?
We do have some witnesses here who could testify, could perhaps answer your question a little bit better. We have recorders from Dakota County as well as Hennepin County, right?
Mr. Chairman, I'm just worried for you going forward. I don't mean to bring anybody's bad ideas to anybody, but just in the event.
Mr. Chair, Representative Zellers,
exactly.
The software itself has to run through a very strict validation engine to meet the requirements for recording schemas as designed by the state task force. Those validation engines will be very strict with the business rules. Any other vendor could develop software and come into the state of Minnesota and want to market that software as long as it met the same validation rules. If you had someone who didn't like a current system on the market, they could certainly contract with someone to develop one as long as it met those validation engine rules.
That was exactly my question, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Okay, any further questions from the committee? Representative Saylor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Beckman, I just had a very simple question. Maybe I missed when you were talking earlier, but does AMC, and do all of the counties think this is a good idea, the recorders throughout this, you know, in some of the rural counties that might have some technology issues or not? Is everybody on board here?
Mr. Beckman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Saylor, it has been my experience in having spoken with probably 85 of the 87 county recorders in the state of Minnesota. They are very supportive of this, and in fact, I would venture to guess that at least 50% of them have vendors currently in place that could turn this on tomorrow if they legally could do it.
Mr. Chairman, my understanding is that AMC doesn't support this proposal.
We're seeing heads nodding. Any further questions? Okay, at this point, the chair is going to lay over House File 938. Right number, right? And the two bills, the parties advocating the two bills will be working on the differences over the next week, and we'll bring them up next week sometime.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
And we are in recess, or we are adjourned.